Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast. This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy. And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi everyone, welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy and I like watching scary movies, and so I watch them and I tell you about them. And we're missing our dear Henley. It's been a while since we've all three been together.
I know.
Oh God, I miss it.
I miss it. Sometimes, and you know, sometimes life gets in the way. Sometimes life finds a way and sometimes life gets in the way.
That's true. Those are two things that are true.
And we want to support everybody's well-being here. And sometimes that means you got to not record the podcast with your friends. And so we miss Henley very much. And we'll all be back someday. We promise. We promise.
Let's just say Henley would have had a hard time with this week's movie, maybe a blessing for her. I personally loved it and I can't wait to talk about it, but before we get into this week's movie, did anything scary happen to you this week, Emily?
Did anything scary happen to me this week? I'll say that I have developed throughout the past 2 years, I have developed some habits to cope with the constant anxiety, and some of them
is important.
And we are still very much dealing with all of that anxiety, but you know, we've reemerged somewhat into regular life ish, the new normal, whatever it is. But I have not abandoned these habits, and I'm starting to realize that some of the things that I'm doing, I should stop, but I can't. Like, for example, and you know this to be true, Sammy, so early in the pandemic, going on a lot of walks, right? That's what everybody was doing, because you should just go outside and go on walks because we were going very stir crazy. And I started listening to Harry Potter in Spanish audiobooks.
Yes.
Because I'm like, here's what I'll do. I'll work on my Spanish. Harry Potter's comforting to me. This would be great. This was more than two years ago. Yeah. There are only 7 books. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stop re-listening to them. It is the only thing I listen to almost exclusively. When I'm sewing, I'm listening to Harry Potter audiobook in Spanish. When I'm cleaning, I'm listening to Harry Potter audiobook in Spanish. Take a walk. And I know them all by heart. I know the Spanish books by heart now. And that is like, I know that it's become its own sickness. But I can't stop. And I'm sort of like, is this going to be the rest of my life the only thing that I listen to? You've recommended podcasts to me. I've started listening to some of them. I still have to choose.
You gravitate back to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wish I had logged the hours of how long I've done this, because I'm alarmed by it, but I also won't stop. And the other thing is, you know how much I like to sit when I'm in the shower. I've talked about this before. I love when it's been a hard day, or I'm honestly just trying to treat myself. A lot of people think of sitting in the shower as a sadness activity. I couldn't disagree more. I find it to be indulgent, and I love, and it used to be an infrequent thing, a little treat for myself as I'm taking a shower and maybe I'll sit down for a little bit. And I have one of those little bath pillows that you put against the back wall, and it now lives there permanently. And almost every time I shower, I just sit and I lean against my little back pillow and I sit in the shower. And that makes me take quite a long shower. And these things just, they don't feel sustainable, but I feel myself just grabbing hold of them like so tightly. And I just don't know when I will stop. And it's a little concerning.
You know, I don't know if it will be any comfort to you, but these don't sound like bad things to me, really.
Thank you. No, I'm certainly, there could be worse spices than here in Spanish and sitting in the shower, but is this just forever is basically what I'm still a little bit scared about.
Have you thought about expanding to something a little like adjacent, like Lord of the Rings Spanish audiobook, like another fantasy? You wouldn't.
No, that sounds awful to me.
Too crazy.
Awful to me. Okay. I even tried to spice it up listening to, there is like a Spain Spanish Harry Potter audiobook, and I've done a little bit of that, and I'm this isn't what I like.
The lisps on the S.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't like this. This isn't what I know. This isn't what I love. And I've gone back to my original Latin American Spanish Harry Potter audiobook that I rent on my phone from the LA Public Library, which has them all. So
I say embrace it. I don't know if that's what you want to hear, but
no, I love to be enabled.
I think it's fine, and I think it's honestly pretty cool. I think both of those things sound cool. So
try sitting in the shower. I really recommend to anybody to try to sit in the shower as like a fun choice and not, you know, I'm too drunk or I'm too sad, which is usually how it happens for most people. Mm-hmm. It's a great treat. It's a great treat.
I love that.
Sammy, how about you? Anything scary this week?
Yeah, there was something a little scary.
Oh, boy. I know when you tell me that in our real lives, I'll tell you about it on the pod. I'm like, oh, no, she's saving something and she's had something bad.
Similarly, you know, it could be worse. But OK, so I was gone last weekend at a bachelorette party and it was in Sonoma and I drove. And so on Sunday, I drove back kind of along. It's like 6 hours. Not the craziest drive.
That's a long day, though.
You're tired after it was a 4 day bachelorette party, which is a little longer than most. So I was pooped.
That's very ambitious.
I was very tired by the time I got home. So excited to just lay on the couch, watch some TV, have an early night, go to bed at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. And I was on track to do just that.
Oh, boy.
And as I turned off the TV to go to bed, my smoke alarm let out a beep, just one single beep.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking it's a chirp. That fucking low battery thing always happens at these inconvenient times.
Mm-hmm.
So I fucking drive to Rite Aid.
I was out of batteries.
I'm usually pretty good at keeping them on hand.
And you didn't just take it off the wall and put it outside and think, hope there's not a fire? Because that's what I do.
I probably should have done that. But no, I didn't. I looked in my drawer. It was out of 9-volt batteries. Said, oh, my God, I have to drive to Rite Aid right now. This is not what I want to do. But I also do not want this to be happening all night long. So I got a battery, did it, changed it. Fine. No more beeps. And for 5 days, that remained the case. So I did get rest that night.
This story really jumped in time more than I thought it would.
It's been a journey.
Okay.
So then Friday night, I watched this week's movie. And literally the second it ended, a beep from the smoke alarm.
Same one?
I don't know, because it's just one beep. So by the time I can investigate,
you don't know where it's coming from.
I can't see where it's coming. It's just very fucking loud. And again, just one. And then it stopped. And I was like, okay, well, it's a new battery. There's nothing I can do. So I went to bed and it just beeped periodically throughout the night.
Oof.
Woke me up a couple of times. My cats are in hell. This is their nightmare. And by the morning, I called my landlord and he came and he replaced both of my smoke detectors because I was like, I replaced the batteries on both of them already. It's still doing it. And it's doing it in a way that it's not consistent enough so that I like kind of look crazy because it's like, is it really happening? Or is she just like making this up? And I was like, I swear to God, it's happening. And he's like, okay, hopefully they're just like faulty. We'll replace them. So he replaces both of my smoke detectors. Seems fine. He leaves an hour later. Beep again.
Oh no. I'm like, oh no.
Okay, they're new batteries, new smoke detectors. So now I go and I take both of them off the wall, unplug them, take the batteries out. I put them in my hall closet.
Yep.
Cover them in blankets and pillows, shut the door. What could possibly be that's the end of the story, right?
Yeah.
It's not. Another hour later, the same beep, just as loud. And now I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? I felt so crazy.
Yeah.
It was making me, this took basically all of Friday and bled into Saturday as well, where Beep is just like haunting me. And eventually my other landlord comes in and is like, where's your carbon monoxide detector?
Yep.
And it's this other hidden detector.
Yep.
And it was that, and we fucking figured it out. But Jesus Christ, I felt like I was losing my goddamn mind. And my cats are so on edge now because there's just been like,
they're just waiting for the next beep.
There's beeps and men coming into the house fixing things. They barely know what a man is. And so they're very, very stressed.
Oh, but no.
I think we're on the other side of it now.
I think you must be. Yeah.
And if a beep happens,
it's not fun.
While we're recording this podcast, I will, I don't know, turn into the Hulk. I will, or evaporate into thin air. I don't know. I'll be so furious.
Those are two very different responses.
I don't know. Something's gonna be really bad.
It's really infuriating. I remember when I used to live in a place where I had a staircase to my bedroom, and so the ceiling above the staircase was as high as the second floor. Uh-huh. But there's a, you know how staircases work, and the smoke detector was at the top of the staircase, but in a way that like, you couldn't reach it. You could only reach it on a ladder, but then you'd be putting the ladder on the staircase. And that was happening to me. It was beeping. And I was like, how the fuck?
Oh, that's scary.
And I ended up getting a big, I get a broom and I just smashed it off the ceiling. Cause I was like, I can't live this way. So that was my solution. It's hell.
Oh, it is hell. So I hate smoke detectors. I get that they're good. They're good. We need them.
Carbon monoxide detector too. We need that, but
they're on my shit list at the moment.
Yeah, fair.
But another scary thing that happened to me this week was I watched a very scary movie that I loved a lot.
Okay. Had you ever seen it before?
I had not.
Okay.
This is my first viewing, and this has been one that I have been excited about for a while because
which makes me nervous.
I've just heard a lot about it, a lot of great things. I figured we would do it eventually, and I'm very happy that day has come. So this week's movie is The Wailing. It came out in 2016, written and directed by Na Hong Jin, starring Kwak Do Won, Hwang Jun Min, Chun Wo Hee, Kim Hwan Hee, and Jun Kunimura. And it is streaming on Shudder.com.
Ooh, Shudder.com. And we have a guest this week who chose this movie. Very excited to have him here. Welcome to the podcast, Neil Campbell.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Hi, yay. Neil.
Hello.
Okay, Neil, did anything scary happen to you this week?
Yes, I guess this would be sort of, at this point, it's a thing that I'm kind of numb to, but if someone were ever to like house it for me or something, I think they would get scared a lot.
Oh boy.
Okay.
So my house, the way to get to like the front door is sort of a narrow kind of walkway, and we have like a ring doorbell, so it has like, and then like chimes inside the house if someone just walks past it, like not even just ringing it.
As it has a video too that
yes.
you can see,
yes,
right, okay.
And so probably if you go by it and set off the motion alert and set off the chimes, then you know it's like 7 seconds before someone's actually at the front door.
Okay.
And so, you know, typically I know if someone's coming over or not, you know, or if there's like food getting delivered or whatever. But, and I think it's not supposed to, as I recall, when I bought it, it was like not supposed to like let little animals like set it off. But at night when it's in night vision mode, if there's like, it'll go off.
Oh boy.
At the paranormal activity hour.
And you get like these chimes at like 2:30 a.m. or something that, you know, it's like, is someone walking up to my front door right now? And
like
so,
in 7 seconds, someone will be.
Yeah. But it's there's this just big black cat that wanders through the neighborhood and like will pass through it and somehow set it off.
Oh, my God.
I mean, some nights doesn't come at all. Some nights it comes 2-3 times a night. At this point, I actually usually sleep through it, or I'll turn the volume down, or sometimes I'll just mute it if it's like did wake me up. I'm like, nope, not dealing with this. So I'll mute it. But so it doesn't, but like if someone was staying here for the first time, sometimes I even wake up in the morning, I check the history and I'm like, oh, it rang 3 times last night and I slept through it all. But
wow.
Definitely this, and then also sometimes a skunk will do the same thing. So this week there were multiple big black cat and skunk alarms going off in the dead of night.
How long did it take you to figure out that it was that? Were you like very scared the first few times it happened?
I can't actually remember the first time it happened. And actually the cat and the skunk are kind of newer. There used to be another cat that would come through, and there's been other cat. Once a raccoon came through. So I forget when it first would happen. I mean, one time even like a spider like crawled right in front of the camera and set it off. So I can't remember when it first happened, but I got to a point where like hearing it after 11 p.m. wasn't suddenly like, oh no, what's happening? It was like,
right.
Oh,
this is
cat.
A like boy who cried wolf situation. Yeah. This is setting up for you ignoring the burglar.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Yeah. It's, I just now ignore it at night and I'm like, oh, I'll look at a video of the cat in the morning or whatever. And then,
yeah. In like a heist movie, someone is dangling a fake spider in front of your thing. Exactly. So then you can like get to the door. And what a crazy claim by the manufacturers to be like, well, animals won't set it off.
I'm making that up. Seems but like I do. Seem to recall that it was like not supposed to.
Like a spider set it off. Come on.
Yeah.
But a very close up spider.
It was
spider.
Very close. Yeah. True. I will say. And maybe the cat just is nocturnal and skunks are too and stuff. So maybe animals just aren't coming during the day. It never gets set off by animals during the day. So I do think there's something about these
that,
dark
like,
black
vision.
Animals, these black cat, the skunk in the night vision, like contrasting the image enough or whatever that it sees it more than it should or something. But
good to know if I ever get a Ring alarm to be aware of that.
That would scare me
because I would be very scared.
Yeah,
that would scare me a lot. We have a lot of critters that like walk around here at night, and even just hearing them rustle around at night, which is a normal animal thing to do, I sometimes get scared because it could be a person walking around.
Could be. So Neil.
Yes.
I hear that you like horror.
I'm a big fan of horror movies, yes.
Can you tell us your relationship with horror? I'm dying to know.
Well, I would say sort of probably my main headline. I mean, I love them, and let's see. I think when I was in high school, Scream came out. And not that was even like my gateway. I mean, I remember being at like a sleepover when I was 10 or something, and they had rented Pet Sematary, and I didn't watch it. I like hid the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually remember like then this isn't even a horror movie, but people for like another birthday party were watching Total Recall. And I'd heard someone gets shot in the head in that movie. And I was like, that sounds so horrifying. And then I was like, I'm going to be brave and watch it. I'm 12 now or something. And it's like literally like it's Sharon Stone or something. It's like a red dot goes on her head. It's not like it's not like as grotesque as I thought. And then I was like, oh, I can handle anything now. So then I think I remember then watching like The Fly and really liking that and stuff. So I was like, oh, I instantly went to like, I can deal with this. But then
you just needed the one shot in the head and
then,
you're
like,
good.
Scream came out and that sort of led a bit of a resurgence and sort of went from like, oh, there's always some new like Friday the 13th or some schlocky thing coming out to like horror's kind of cool again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Yeah, I've loved it ever since. But I don't even know why I mentioned Scream isn't like for me personally even that pivotal, but just that in the era, I think that really like
that definitely was a moment.
Yeah,
like
mainstreamed it. Yeah,
because what was that 99?
No, 94.
Oh, 94.
Yeah, because I think Scream 2 even came out when I was in high school. Yeah, so I think it's like 96 and 98.
And then we got all of the like late 90s, early 2000s, like The Ring and The Grudge.
Yes.
And,
yeah. So when I first moved to LA, there used to be a video store. That we'd go rent just anything we could. They would have like stuff that wasn't necessarily distributed in the U.S. yet. Like it was called, what was it called? Dang, I forget. But is that like the corner of like Franklin and Hillhurst? Mm-hmm. I think there's like a Thai spa there now. It's like next to a Subway.
I've gotten a massage at that spa.
Yes, well, you see a video store and I'm just blanking on the name. But we would go get like my roommates and I would get just anything,
They have
Ringu or Ju-on or whatever, like things that maybe were a little hard to find. And then at the time anyway, so we started doing a thing where and this is what I was going to get at originally. My main headline is we every year do this festival still. That's like we could just call it Horror Fest, but that we get a group of friends together and watch movies some weekend in October. And the sort of gimmick of it is it always starts with something that is like for kids or is like G-rated, like or like a Halloween special or something. And then we build up in intensity over the course of the night and end with something really kind of The definition varies. It used to be like gorier, but I don't even know that that's always the case. Maybe just right. the most intense or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. something we might refer to as a double black diamond.
Yes, yes.
A deep end horror film of some sort. What are some of the like? What are some of those that you've done? Like a Hereditary, maybe?
No, we didn't. When we started, we watched. I mean, literally, I think the first time like we started with Haunted Mansion, like the Eddie Murphy movie. And mm-hmm. I think we ended with Faces of Death.
Oh, I don't even know what that is.
Faces of Death. God.
But it sounds scary.
It's actually pretty, like, cheesy. It was this thing that, like, the legend... Okay, it's real footage of people dying. Like, actual people
Jesus
dying.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
But, and it was, like, sort
but
of like
cheesy?
A... here's the thing. The original is mostly faked. And the little bits of actual footage are sort of, like, things you might actually see in, like, Driver's Ed. Like...
Okay.
A little gross, but like footage of like a burned up body in a car crash
okay.
or something.
Okay.
Or
right.
like a wreckage from like a plane crash and like an arm or something like that that you sort of see. And or like I think there's a little, maybe there's a thing about like a monkey getting killed. I haven't seen this, but and it's hosted by this guy's like Dr. Francis P. Gross. And it's like a doing a big character. And it's like, these might drive you mad. And it's like showing these clips. And a lot of them are just made up and are faked. And so... Its reputation is like, this is the grossest thing you'll ever see.
Yeah.
And I think the sequels maybe did dip less into the fake and more into the real. There's like a whole series. I think in like the 80s and stuff and 90s, it was like, this is like this underground video trade or like midnight screenings right. and places. And it was like a fucked up thing. And so I'd always heard about it. We never watched one. And they had it at that video store. So we watched the first Faces of Death, their first time. And then I think like the second year we did it, then we're like, well, let's up it. And we watched this thing called Traces of Death that was all real. And we turned it off. It was
Whoa.
Just not pleasant in any way.
Yeah, it's like not entertainment
yeah.
anymore.
Dr. Francis P. Gross or whatever hosting it. I might be adding the P. Maybe there's no P there. But
I like the P too.
But,
I can see why you would add it if that's the case.
So then over the years, I honestly forget if we like have been doing this straight through since like 2003 or 2004.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many times have you done this?
I mean, we definitely did the first one, I think, in 2003, maybe 2004. It's possible it was like took a few years before we were like, oh, this is actually a tradition. We do this every year. But at this point, I would say, we even did like a virtual one during the pandemic year, during 2020. So we've really done it every year for, at this point, I'd say 12, 15 years, like pretty much.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
I love that.
And the movie I picked today, we didn't watch during it, but I was looking at some of like the faves over the years and just see if there was something I could pick just to tie it to that. I know you guys have done Wreck. That was a big hit when we did.
Oh,
Wreck
yeah.
is great.
Wreck.
Love Wreck.
Some of the other finales. We did Raw 1 year was the finale.
Raw is great.
Watched. And let's see. Martyrs.
Ooh, we haven't done it yet. So nervous
I was close to picking that, but I rewatched it and I was like, I just had more to say about the way, I'm a bigger fan of the wailing, and it was a little unpleasant.
All those torture porn ones, I feel like there's always some rape. There's always some rape, and it's a little,
that was what I was
I feel like
Martyrs. That's tough.
I anticipate has some rape in it.
I was like, yeah, I was just watching. I was like, why am I just watching like some women get brutalized? I'm like, I'm going to show up on this podcast and be like, hey, here's this movie I made.
Yeah.
It's a tough genre for that reason. Yeah. It's, you know.
That French New Extremity. Those were really what we were hitting for a few years. Inside. Have you watched that one?
No, I feel like the only one of those we've done is High Tension.
That was the first one we did of those.
And I liked it. I think probably that might be considered one of the tamer ones.
It has a twist that like doesn't make sense, right? High Tension.
Yeah, the twist doesn't really make sense.
No.
Yeah, I love that. yeah. High Tension we did. That was an early one. Martyrs. Inside is pretty... It's like a pregnant woman getting chased, and it like cuts inside the womb to the baby at times, like slashing around and stuff. You got that one's pretty great.
Whoa,
sloshing around.
Yeah, it's like I want to see those movies, but we gotta space them out a lot.
Yeah,
we did High Tension a little too recently, so we'll wait a year.
We'll wait a little bit. We did Raw recently too.
Yeah, Raw's great, but yeah, that's like what I mean. Like some years, like probably the scariest thing was maybe watching like sort of a ghost, like a J-horror kind of thing or something, mm-hmm. but then we would end with like Raw or something, which is more intense, but wasn't the scariest of the night, you know? But yeah, I would say the ones that have like sort of that like well-crafted horror scare. I mean, like, you know, that The Conjuring does and stuff, but I think that a lot of like Japanese horror and like Insidious and stuff do a lot. Those, I think, are when you're watching with a crowd, seem to be the most effective when it's kind of like that, just that sort of thing of like, it's looking under the bed and then looking up again and then looking under the bed. And then when you come back up, someone's in the bed, you know, that type of thing. Oh, we watched one. This one I also almost picked for today, called this Argentine film called Terrified, Aterrados.
Ooh,
I've heard of that. There's also a film called Terrifier, right? Because I feel like I mix these two up.
Terrified is pretty scary and great threat. But again, I was like, I just had a little more, I think, to talk about the wailing, but
it's crazy how there. I mean, there are just so many movies, and don't like I keep started. Thinking. I know I'm so overwhelmed. I keep thinking we're gonna run out, or that like when we ask a guest to come on, and I always feel a little guilty sending the list of like we've already done so many, and there are just so many more that are that like there's always new releases, but there's so many that we haven't even heard of, let alone covered. And it's just, it's amazing that you've been doing this horror fest for years and years and years, and there's still all these movies to cover. It's really crazy.
There's a lot.
For sure. Yeah. So, yeah. So we, you know, we'll try to mix it up. We'll try to get a ghost thing and something really gory or something with like a
something for
slasher
everybody.
Or something. Yeah. You know, or like some of like the Fulci kind of like gross out Italian horror stuff zombie we've watched and stuff. So
What was the first time you saw The Wailing? You've seen this movie before?
Yes, this is my favorite movie of the year 2016. I saw it spring of 2016. There's these theaters in LA, the CGV cinemas in Koreatown at like 6th and Western. I saw Train to Busan there. I've seen a few different films there. And so I saw The Wailing there spring of 2016. And I just like loved it, like was so blown away. And it was one of those things where like, oh, this movie's great. And then, you know, the end of the year, whatever. Not that I've ever even like written down a list of like favorite movies, but you sort of mentally do that. And I was like, I remember the end of that year, I was like, I liked Arrival and I liked Manchester by the Sea. So I was like, I don't think anything topped the experience for me of The Wailing. I love that movie. So I just remember I was at work and my friend Luke Del Tredici was like, watch this trailer, this looks good. And I hadn't heard anything about it. And then he showed me the trailer. I was like, yeah, that looks great. And then it came out like a few weeks later and I saw it. And then I went and watched all the director's other movies, which aren't really horror,
I'm really excited you picked it. I've been wanting to see it for a while. I'll give us some stats about it. It has a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, I looked because I was like, that must be the highest horror Rotten Tomato rating that we've ever done. Yeah. And the only one higher is Host, the Zoom one, has 100%.
Ha.
Huh.
And that's not aggregate, if that's the right term, because like Get Out and Us are number one and two in aggregate ratings. So they have lower percentages, but like a lot more ratings. So they're like ranked higher.
Yeah, I was going to say not many people have maybe ranked.
Yeah.
Host. It was scary.
I liked Host.
Yeah, I liked it as well. The Wailing also has a 81% on Metacritic and a 7.4 on IMDb.
Have we ever had a movie that's gotten in the eights on IMDb? Is there a movie in the eights on IMDb? Nobody who writes things on IMDb actually likes movies.
Probably The Godfather.
I'm sure like Avengers Endgame is like 8.7.
I think they're rare for sure. And the budget for this film was $8 million US, and it made $51.3 million. And I have a little bit of trivia, not much, but something I was interested to hear is this is Ari Aster's favorite horror movie of all time.
Oh.
And there's a shot in this that before I knew that, I was like, this shot is like exactly in Hereditary. And so I was like, oh, that makes sense. I feel like I could see a little bit of Ari Aster's inspiration. Wait, because Hereditary's after it. Yeah. Hereditary was 2018. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I just got tripped up. And then this one, I was just happy to read that Emily will not have context for it yet, but it's that no animals were harmed in the making of this movie, because there are some parts where I was like, a couple moments, you're not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, there's no fucking way that this is fake. And it is, thank God. Well, there's one. Okay. It says no higher animals were harmed. So there is a worm. There's a worm that gets a hook in it, and that is real.
Would the Humane Society have a problem with that? A worm?
I don't know.
You know how you have to get like a Humane Society approval on a. Where does it start?
What's the line?
That is a moral question. A higher animal. I'd never even considered that.
I didn't know
we ranked
them that way. Interesting.
But that's all the trivia I had.
I'm okay with a worm being harmed, personally. If you want to know my own moral code, I feel like that works for me. That's fine.
I'm happier that that is the real one and not some of the other ones. Because, yeah, they look pretty real.
And you did say we were glad that Henley isn't here for this because there's some kid stuff.
Well, Henley has had a sick baby recently, and I feel like that's been very stressful for her. And there is a sick child.
A sick child. OK.
It's, you know,
doesn't bother me.
For us, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine.
Oh, boy.
But OK, should we watch the trailer?
Sure.
Yes.
피라말을 죽이려고.
놈은 그냥 미끼를 던져본 것이고 자네 딸내미는 그곳을 확 물어본 것이오. 내 눈깔로 직접 봐야스 같다.
'Whoa, this looks really cool. This also looks gorgeous.
It's so beautiful. Yeah, I was going to say the cinematography is Hong Kyung-pyo. It's the same cinematographer as Parasite. He works with Bong Joon-ho a lot as well. I mean, it's beautiful. And this place is beautiful. I can't remember now the name of the city in South Korea.
I think it's like Gokdeong or something. And that's, I think, what the movie is called in Korea.
Yeah. Oh. Yep. It's struck me at multiple times throughout the movie. I was like, holy shit, it's like this place is so beautiful. I want to go here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then some really bad things happen there that make you not want to be there.
Ooh. Oh, I'm very excited. I still feel like I don't know what it could possibly be about to happen.
That's kind of the magic of the movie.
Yes.
You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home, cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge, open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the U.S., and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem, because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install, so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram, and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good-looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc. They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/2scary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/2scary. One last time, that's the number 3daiblinds.com/2scary.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
And it's a long one, so should we get into it?
Let's do it.
It's crazy how talking about a movie can sometimes take longer than if you were to watch it, because you got to, like, really, you know, show, not tell.
It's also one of these movies, it's like Mulholland Drive or something, where, like, okay, I'm trying to describe what you see in the moment and not try to offer the interpretation of what is actually going
on. Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's tricky. It can be tricky. But yeah, I'm here for you and you take it away.
Okay. So it begins, we're in this village in Korea. And I think the first thing we see is the guy baiting the hook with the worms. I think that's like the opening shot maybe, right?
Or at real least worm. Okay.
Scene there. Yeah.
A lower creature.
Yes. And this police officer is sort of like this chubby kind of, he's got a wife and a daughter, lives with his mother-in-law as well. And he like gets a call that he has to sort of show up to a crime scene. And they're like, oh, well, you need to eat first. And he's like, oh, I can't, I should go to the crime scene. And they're like, no, you should eat. And then it like does sort of like a hard, like a comedy cut basically. Mm-hmm. And he's like having a full meal, like eating a big meal before he goes. And then when he finally shows up, they're like, where were you? What took so long? And so what you get, and there's a lot of like slapstick and a lot of comedy.
It's very funny in the beginning. Yeah.
First like hour or so of this movie. It's that same thing that I think, you know, Bong Joon-ho also gets a lot of deserved mm-hmm. praise for, of like being able to kind of
blend these genres together.
Blend the genres. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like so effective in horror because that really like puts you at ease.
Yes.
So that then when upsetting things happen, you're like, ah, well, I thought I was having a good time.
Yeah.
So, and here's where I forget a little bit. Like they go to this crime scene and there's like,
so the main guy, our protagonist's name is Jong-gu, and he arrives, and after we've seen him, you know, like eat his breakfast and stuff, it's like clear he arrives to this crime scene and it's like a lot gnarlier than he anticipated. Like he seems like, oh my God, like he's very taken aback mm-hmm. by it and looks a little like in over his head. And yeah, it's basically a family has been killed by one of the family members who basically I feel like looks like a zombie. He's sitting outside.
Yes.
He's covered in a rash and boils.
And he's covered in blood also. And he's just sort of catatonic, almost just sort of staring off. And mm-hmm. there's like a relative of his who's like screaming. He's like, why'd you do this? And all this. And like, there's just, it's like kind of like chaos. And this guy just, clearly is kind of getting in over his head. You know, they investigate that a bit and they sort of go, oh, maybe he like ate these weird mushrooms or something like that.
Mm.
And then they're at the police station one night and him and his like partner. And then they just get scared. There's like a flash of lightning and there's someone standing outside, like this naked woman right outside the window. They get really scared of that. And they just like freak out and scream. They're not acting like cops who are like, oh, let's go do something about this. They're like hiding and screaming and stuff.
So Jong-gu's partner has like tells him at the station this story that he's heard from a friend of a guy, a hunter who was like checking his traps in the woods and trips and falls and hits his head. And when he wakes up, there is a man in a diaper eating the raw meat of whatever animal was caught in the trap.
The deer or whatever. Yeah.
So that's like the story is like why they're kind of spooked in the police station. Oh, and that then he like turned to him and he has these like red demonic looking eyes, and the hunter like swears by this story and he's like, it's a friend of a friend, like I swear this story's true. And Jong-gu is like, no, that's bullshit, he ate mushrooms. But they're a little creeped out, it's like raining and stormy outside. And so then when they see this like naked woman, they behave in not in the way that you would think that a police officer would. They like scream and like hide under their desks. They're like, oh my god, who is this lady?
And this guy in the story is like someone who with the red eyes or whatever is like someone they're sort of aware of. It's sort of like a hermit type guy who lives in the woods. Mm-hmm. Who's a Japanese guy,
mm-hmm.
which one of my best friends growing up was Japanese. So I was Korean, but would speak about that there was, you know, a lot. I think there's a lot of bias or a lot, you know, yeah. I think it's in Korean culture, not uncommon for people to be somewhat anti-Japanese.
Yes.
Interesting.
Some tension between the countries.
Yes, exactly. And so it feels a little like there's like xenophobic. It's like, oh, it's that crazy Japanese guy who lives up.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Here is sort of what they're sort of blaming the other in a mm-hmm. way here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, then the naked woman shows up, and then I can't remember exactly, but then they
never find the naked lady, but they do, you know, something is going on, and they say like it started when the Japanese man arrived.
Yes.
Aha.
But they don't really know what to make of it. And there's like one scene before the next crime scene where he takes his daughter. His daughter's name is Hyojin, and they go to a store together, and she buys a little hair clip thing.
Right. She catches him having sex with her mom. And so it's like in a car. And so then it cuts and he's like buying her a bunch of toys. Yeah. And he's like, he's like, what are you? Do you have any questions about anything? Like he's kind of like feels bad that she caught them having sex. So then they go to another crime scene. And then as they're driving away from that or nearby, the naked woman from earlier is like hanging from a tree. And they sort of, you know, put together that she is the one who killed these people at this crime scene and then hung herself. I don't remember exactly then how they connect it to the stranger again, but at this point they decide to go see the stranger, right? Like
one of Jong-gu's friends says that he like has lunch with him or something one day, and he's like, oh, do you remember that woman that got, or that Japanese man right. raped a woman? And he's like, yeah, I remember that, which is like, I'm sorry, this like is just common knowledge and we're not worrying about that.
Right.
We're not going to do anything about it.
Yeah, but it seems to again be sort of like rumors about, oh, right. I heard he like,
yeah, he's a monster.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he says that's the woman, like the woman that hung herself is the woman and killed the people is the woman that the Japanese man raped.
Goodness.
And it's also like, it seems like Jong-gu and his partner are not taken super seriously by the rest of the department. And so, because like none of what happens, I feel like, is normal police protocol. It seems like they're kind of off doing their own thing, being like, well, I guess we'll investigate the Japanese man. Because they kind of closed the case basing it on the magic mushrooms thing? They're like, there was mushrooms.
Yeah, like, and also in both cases, they know who the killer was. So they don't right. necessarily think that there's a crime to be
some
solved
larger,
at this point.
Yeah.
Although, both the times they have, like, the boils and stuff, but...
Yeah, so it's just him and his partner that, like, know something else is up, so they're kind of going rogue.
And so, and then the partner's nephew is a deacon, studying to be a Catholic priest, who speaks Japanese, or who can speak Japanese. So they bring him along to translate, and they go to see the Japanese guy. The first time they go there, the dog is he has like a guard dog that's like attacking them or is like barking at them, and like its chain is like getting loose from the thing. And the partner discovers a room full of like photos of the victim, like basically anyone involved in these crimes.
Uh-oh.
And not just like crime scene photos, like photos of them. Normal, like daytime photos.
Yes, before they were like
both before
zombified
and after.
Yeah.
So there's like photos of them alive and dead.
And there's little like objects in the room too. And the partner grabs one, and then they, you know, sort of harass the Japanese guy, then leave. And then on the drive home, the partner's like, "Is this your daughter's shoe?" And he's like, "What?" And then he goes home to talk to his daughter, and he's like, "Is this your shoe?" And she's giving him like a ton of attitude. And earlier we've seen her just be like so sweet and stuff. And then now she's like,
she like screams at him like, "What's it to you? What's so fucking important?" Like, and she's how old? Probably 10. I feel like she's like, it was the cutest, sweetest little girl. And yeah, now she's like screaming and cursing at him, and they're all like, "What the fuck?"
And so then at night, sort of goes into her bedroom with a flashlight. And he kind of like looks and sees she's got like boils kind of on her upper leg. But then she like wakes up and she's like, "What are you doing? Like hiking up your daughter's skirt in the middle of the night?" And so, you know, and she's like,
"Whoa!"
And he's like getting freaked out. And so,
and the rest of the family also, like the mother and the mother-in-law are both like, "Something is up," because she's like screaming, "Stop fucking looking at me! Stop fucking looking at me!" And the grandma is the grandma is like, "We got to get." Like, I know a shaman.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I think they go to a doctor first, and the doctor is not sure what's going on, right? And then they go to a shaman, or the shaman comes to the house, and he does sort of like an initial kind of like scan in a way, or does like a little like chant or something, and he sort of is expensive, I think they kind of reference, or he costs some money, and like he sort of realizes, he like does this kind of cool whistling thing. There's a lot of stuff in this where I kind of go like, it's similar to Mulholland Drive. I have this thought where I'm like, there's stuff in this where I'm like, I bet I would understand more cultural context if I were Korean. But also, I bet some of it is made up stuff that in the same way that like, if a Korean movie, if a Korean person watched like Mulholland Drive, I doubt they would be like, well, I guess if you were American, you'd get all of that. You know,
yeah,
like,
I think there is like,
this might actually be the filmmaker kind of making some stuff up and getting this. I think there is stuff that's deliberately kind of like vague or made up or strange that's not like, oh, you would just get this if I was Korean. So anyway, like, he does this thing where he like whistles and as he walks around and then he looks at the pot and he's like, what's in that pot or something? They're like, it's just soy sauce. And he like breaks it open and there's like a dead crow inside. And so you got all this like kind of cool stuff with the shaman. He's basically like, this is like a big evil here. There's a lot of evil. We need to do this huge ritual and to free your daughter, and it'll cost even more money and stuff.
Yeah. Mm. At some point they talk to the hunter
that saw the Japanese
guy. That they had heard the story from. Yeah, they're like, let's interview him and ask him some questions. And they make him take them to the site that it happened. And there's a bunch of dead animal corpses. And he's like, this is it. This is where they, this is where he was eating the corpse. And it starts like raining and they like tell him that he has to come with them to the house and he won't. And they get in a little scuffle and he falls and hurts himself again. The hunter guy who already fell down this hill once, and the cops are like, oh, fuck, sorry. And like trying to make it better. And he's screaming at them, I hope you both get struck down by lightning. And at that moment, a lightning bolt hits the hunter and they take him to the hospital, and his wife or something is at his bedside and he's in full body bandages.
Oh, because that would burn you.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? There's a scene in. Yeah.
I always think about what that would. You'd get electrocuted, but no, you would get burned.
Yes. And there's a scene in Sinister 2, which I watched recently, where they're all electrocuted and all of their skin turns crispy, even though they're not on fire. Yeah. And I had never considered that as a thing. But yeah. I guess that's
because even
happens.
When you get like a little shock, if you like from an outlet or something, it's hot,
right?
Because it,
Yuck.
No, I don't like that at all.
When I was a kid, I thought that if you like caught on fire, you melted. Like burning didn't like occur to me. I was like, oh, you'll melt like Wicked Witch or something. Yeah,
like a little candle.
You know, the other thing we've also forgotten that is sort of crucial. This will now make no sense to anybody when they're just sort of like guarding the crime scene. And this woman, who's like the woman in white, I think is kind of her thing, kind of comes up and is kind of like tossing rocks at our main guy. And she sort of speaks very kind of cryptically to him. And he thinks she's just like bothering him and like sniffing around the crime scene. And then it leads to him seeing a vision of the Japanese man. And then he like wakes up like it was a dream. And so anyway, this woman in white becomes an important character.
Yeah.
But, that was earlier on.
And so while they're at the hospital at the bedside of the man who's been struck by lightning, there's like some screaming happening. And in another part of the hospital, they're like, emergency, like everybody get over here. And they follow just to see what's going on. And it is the guy that they had. I'm pretty sure it's the guy that killed the family in the opening scene, right? The one that was kind of like a catatonic and he had been in the hospital there. And he's now convulsing in this way. Full body convulsions, like his looks like his back is breaking and he's like half dangling off the bed and there's like blood coming out of his mouth. And there's this moment they're just watching in horror. Everyone's just screaming, doesn't know what the fuck to do. And And there's a part where his clavicle breaks and like pops out. And it's so, I just like, it got me, it made me feel so gross. And I just was like, we can't not include the clavicle part. Cause it was, I've never seen just, and that's all that breaks. Like the rest of his bones don't break, but just like he's convulsing so hard that he breaks his own clavicle in it. Oof. Yuck.
Yeah. So let's see. Like at one point they leave the daughter alone with like a neighbor to watch, and then they come back and the daughter's like stabbed the neighbor. And I don't think she's dead. I think they're kind of like wheeling her around and stuff. But like, it's clearly like this. I think this is like, okay, we need to do the shaman's expensive.
Yeah, the daughter is clearly going in and out of some sort of possession. She's like full exorcist at times, like screaming fuck you at her parents when this is absolutely not her normal behavior.
And it, and have they linked, has the cop linked the Boyles to the other people? Is he like seeing that as a through line to these other crimes? Okay.
Yeah, but there isn't a lot of like other chatter about that. It's not like people are like, how do we solve the Boyle? Like it's again, sort of all these cases sort of seem to be closed, and but there's this overall mystery of what's going on with these people.
And when they were at the Japanese man's house, he like came back and saw them at his house, and they kind of just left. They were so scared of what they saw there, all the drawings, that they're just like, see you later and just leave. And they try to ask him, you know, like, why did you come here? And he says, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe me.
Yeah. And this is they go back to the house and they sort of really threaten him.
They go back and he's like cleared out everything, all of the incriminating evidence.
And he kills his dog also this time.
But not for real.
Not for real.
Off screen.
But yeah, the dog gets off leash while they're there to try to get the evidence. And he's screaming like, where'd you put it? And he's like, I burned it all. I burned all the photographs. Like, you're not going to find them. And the dog gets off leash and attacks Jong-Goo, and Jong-Goo fucking kills him with a axe or something. What do you call that? Like the ice pick almost looking thing.
Yeah. Like a miner's like pickaxe kind of thing. Yeah.
And the Japanese man does not seem fazed by the dog dying. I thought.
Yes. He's just kind of staring at the guy and doesn't really respond as he's like, get out of this town.
But then the next morning, a goat is strung up dead at Jong-Goo's house. So we're like, oh, yeah, something is up.
And now Jong-Goo does believe that the Japanese man is responsible for what's happening to his daughter.
At this point, he's pretty much like blaming the Japanese guy for this. Yeah. Okay. And so then they hire the shaman to do the exorcism or the death hex or whatever they call it.
He says something fun like, I'm going to cast a deadly hex tomorrow. At the hour of the dog is what he says.
Oh, yes. It, like he looks at it, like he drops like rice on a table and sort of like says, this is what I need to do. Like it's a very, the guy playing the shaman is great. It's, I mean, everyone's very good in this movie, but it's definitely kind of like a showy big deal. So they start doing this big, crazy, like exorcism, essentially ritual. And it's cross cut with the Japanese guy who has found yet another like dead body in a truck. There's been some other crime along the way. We found two more bodies somewhere, and they're like, oh, it's Park Junbei, I think is that's the name of the guy who, like, we got to find him. It's, he killed his wife and somebody or whatever. So we just know there's some other guy out there named Park Junbei. So we see the Japanese man find him like dead in a truck covered with boils and stuff. And so they start cross cutting between this like exorcism ritual and the Japanese man doing some kind of ritual of his own. But as things are happening in the exorcism ritual, it seems to be harming the Japanese man. And yes, he's trying to sort of desperately do his own ritual. And it's in it, and he's taken a photo of like the dead guy in the truck, and it involves the photo and all this stuff. And so and then meanwhile, our Jong-Goo is with his daughter, like just, you know, 10 feet away from where like the shaman's doing the ritual. And she's convulsing like the guy in the hospital. Like her, she's sort of like bending her back weird, and like it looks like she's maybe about to die.
And screaming for it to stop. She's like, make it stop. Oh. It's horrible. The little girl is so good in this. It's really. I was worried about her and how good she was. She's like, how does doing this performance affect you as a kid? I guess maybe it doesn't, because you're not really thinking about things in that way yet. You're just like, I'm just doing getting to yell and throw my body around. But it like looks so upsetting. You're just, God.
Yeah.
She was great.
So then after this big sort of, you know, set piece thing cutting between these two rituals. The Jang-gu says, he stops the ritual and he goes, you know, you're killing my daughter. Stop this. And he doesn't let them finish the ritual. And the shaman's kind of like, you know, bummed about that.
And they take Hyojin to the hospital, and we see that the Japanese man is like collapsed in his ritual room, and we see the woman in white looking at him.
A little glimpse of her again. Uh-oh. And so now Jang-gu gets a bunch of his friends sort of not doing police work. He's like, we just got to go, like, basically kill this guy. It doesn't quite say kill, I think, but it's like, we got to go take care of this guy. Mm-hmm. And they show up to the strangers, the Japanese guy's cabin, and they are looking for him. They can't find him. And then that guy that we had just seen dead in the truck, who the Japanese man was doing a ritual with his photograph, his like reanimated corpse comes up and starts attacking them, and like bites part of the cheek off of one of the of the priest, I think, or the deacon. And it like gets like a one of those like sharp metal rakes kind of put in his head, but it doesn't stop him, and he keeps attacking them.
But this scene has a little bit of a like Shaun of the Dead vibe. It's like a kind of a fun zombie scene.
It's daylight.
So we keep going between these like, is it demons? Is it zombies? Is it a buddy cop movie? Like, again, this like blending. Yeah.
And everyone's like really like panicking and screaming. Like, they're all terrified of this guy. No one's like being brave about it. Yes.
I really don't like reminders that that human teeth can bite through flesh. I really don't like when that comes up.
It's like literally I think of that climactic Shaun of the Dead scene where they're kind of all just, it's like a six on
beating
one situation of them just like freaking and so out. And they eventually.
And then they see the Japanese man in the distance, and we've also been tracking him a little, and he looks like scared now. Like he's sort of it's a little different personality from him, like just sort of dead-eyed staring at them earlier. And now he looks kind of scared. They chase after him. They kind of reach this cliff's edge. We also see the woman in white kind of in the woods here briefly, and they can't find the guy anymore. They reach this cliff's edge. They sort of give up, and we see at the bottom of the cliff, the Japanese man is like hanging on and is like terrified and scared of these guys.
And he starts crying. It's like clear that he's in like a lot of pain, and you feel really bad for him in this moment of just... Because now the woman in white, it's like we were like, now what the fuck is going on? And is he bad?
Yeah, it's seeming like maybe he's not in control, but is more a pawn in all of this than perhaps.
That was, my feeling at the time. And so I'm feeling very bad for him in this moment.
Yes. And there is like this thing of like you're going, well, we've been told, you know, just like in movies in general, it's sort of like, oh, it's going to be it's the Japanese guy. Like you get the feeling of like, oh, we're probably wrong and we're going to. Like, we went to the easiest solution, you know, the guy who's different from us, and we're blaming that guy, and it's going to be something closer to home or something. You start to get that sense.
In the first time they go to his house, when they ask him why he's here, and he's like, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe me. That's when I personally viewing was like, oh, it's not going to be him.
Right. You're like, as you're watching, you're like, oh, maybe those photos are he's trying to protect these people.
Exactly.
He knows something crazy is going on, and so at this point you're like, oh, maybe our guys are like the angry mob, and the Japanese man is some sort of protector or something like that. And so then the Japanese man, I think you see him kind of turn and see the woman in white or something. Then it cuts to the guys, the sort of mob that had gathered to get some mob justice, and they're just driving back down the mountain back to the village. And then the Japanese man's body like falls on their car, like they hit him, and then they get out and they see he's like lying there, and they, instead of like helping him or anything, they throw him off the other side of the cliff like and then they like get in their car and drive away. And then you see this big wide shot that the woman in white was standing on the cliff above.
Oh no.
So yes, now you're going, okay, maybe that Japanese guy wasn't so bad, and maybe she's the bad guy.
He's dead.
It's a little unclear. Probably he may not have been dead when they hit him, but it maybe he is. It's kind of hard to tell.
Okay.
Yes. But they certainly don't help him. They throw him off the cliff even further. So I think then they go home and his daughter's feeling better and she seems to be healed.
Yeah. He like goes to the hospital to see her and she seems fine. And they really sob in each other's arms. And this is the moment of Jang-gu thinking like it's over. Like he did it. He saved his daughter. And it's just like this moment of them just holding each other, crying. really wailing, a lot of wailing in this movie.
Yes. Ah, the wailing.
And I think his wife says something like, thank God for that shaman. And it like kind of pisses off Jonku. He's like, I did something, but I also can't. Not that it pisses him off, but.
Well, I just kind of killed a man, so.
Yeah, he's like, this was me, but I can't take credit.
Then it cuts to the shaman, right, I think. And that's when it's, I don't know where he is exactly, but he encounters the woman in white. He just gets out of his car and his like nose starts like bleeding, like it drips a little, and he like looks, and he's like, huh? And then it starts like pouring blood, and then he starts, and then he sees the woman in white, and I don't remember if she says anything, but he just starts like vomiting so much and blood pouring out of his nose and vomiting, and he's just like, he like freaks and he runs and he like packs up his shit really quick, and then you see him like on a highway. And it says, like, you know, just Seoul, however, and he takes the exit to start heading towards Seoul, or and then suddenly it looks like a bunch of like locusts or something started battering his windshield, and he like screeches to a halt in the middle of the highway, and he like gets out, and there's nothing on his windshield. It's like a vision, and he like the shaman is like, oh no, and he gets back in his car, and then he starts calling Jonku.
I think he called Jonku a bunch before too, because he's now realizing, yes, like, oh, it's the woman in white. And Jonku was at the hospital or something, didn't see the calls, or maybe it was like, I don't want to talk to the shaman right now. And so, but then
taking credit for my work.
Yeah, exactly. But then Jonku does try to get a hold of the shaman while kind of all the crazy shit is happening to the shaman, and so he doesn't answer. And so Jonku is actually at, he drives to the shaman's house and is trying to find him. And then the shaman calls him, and the shaman is like, get back home, get back to your family. I misread the whatever, and it's not the Japanese man.
Yeah. And he's saying does he say it's the woman in white, or is it that just sort of implied?
He says it's a woman. Yeah. He says, I saw a woman.
Oh, did you see her? A young woman in a white dress. Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Jonku puts together, because he has seen her as well at the crime scene, and she seemed to know what happened, how exactly those people died. And so he's like, oh, fuck. And starts heading back home in a panic.
Yeah. Somewhere in this, we cut and we see like his partner, whose nephew is the deacon, has now also killed his like wife and has the boils and is sort of catatonic, and they're talking to the deacon. And I think at this point we also show there's like a news story, and they're like, there was a tainted mushroom tonic or something like that. And so there's like something that's like, and so, and then even when they're like talking to the deacon, they're like, you should get a lawyer, because it's not even his fault, really. It's this tonic like that's been poisoning people.
Right.
Oh boy.
Oh, yeah. He's a victim too.
I don't know that a lawyer will really help. I mean, he still killed people.
And so this is our the climax, I guess, is he gets, I forget what's the daughter's like state at this point. Is she like kind of freaking out? Oh, she's missing.
Oh, no.
There's a few things happening at once. So one thing that's happening is the priest heads out with like a weapon and a Bible, maybe. What is he? Where he's going.
He's got like the rosary beads or whatever, too, or something.
And he's going to the Japanese man's house because he wants to like figure out what happened, because his uncle just killed his family. And so he's doing that. Jonku, I think, goes back to his house. The daughter is missing. We've seen again that she's not, not herself. I think we saw her eating lots of fish.
Right. So I think she comes back. He's out looking for her, and then she comes back. Okay. That's what I'm trying to remember. I think he's out looking for her. He sees the woman in white. He's like, I'm looking for a daughter. She's like, she just got home. And then it cuts back to the house, and she's like kind of standing in the threshold of to enter this house looking fucked up. And the mom and the grandma are like, oh, thank God you're back. And then it like kind of cuts, and she's like sitting on the floor of the kitchen having eaten like a, she's just like eating everything
in the
fridge.
It's like fish heads and fish. It's just like a pile of fish. Like this is not how people normally eat.
And so,
this is a regular snacking.
We're cutting then like into like the deacon is like, he's found this like hidden like cave basically behind the cabin or whatever. And he starts going into the cave, and he sees the old man, the Japanese man, is in there kind of wrapped in a blanket by a fire, like really fucked up and like seemingly trying to like tend to his wounds or something. Mm-hmm. And so he's now encountered the Japanese man. Jonku is now with the woman in white, and the daughter is kind of, we just sort of seen she's at home and she's not.
And normal. There's like a shot of the daughter as she is shoveling fish bones into her mouth. eyeing a knife.
Yes, and we see this knife. That's, I think, the last shot we see of, mm-hmm. of the house. Mm-hmm. So then it goes, this is such a good scene. It goes to John Goo with the woman in white, and she says, I'm the good guy, essentially. The Japanese man is the bad guy. He's working with the shaman, and you have to trust me. You have to have faith in me. And there's been all this stuff throughout. Like, they do talk to, like, the head priest at one point earlier in the movie. There's always this stuff about faith and who are you believing in and all this. Mm-hmm. Stuff. And so she's like, you have to believe me. I'm trying to help you. He's the shaman is helping the Japanese man, who's basically a demon. And she says, what you need to do to save her is wait till you hear the rooster crow 3 times. And then if you do that and go home, everything will be okay. But if you don't do that, your daughter's going to kill everybody. And he's like really freaking out. He's not sure if he should trust her or not. Meanwhile, we're cutting to the cave where the deacon goes in, and he's trying to talk to the Japanese man. He's trying to find, like, there's always been this thing of, like, are you real or are you a ghost? Even there's like a quote from the Bible at the beginning of like, ghosts, I'm a real man, touch me. Ghosts don't have flesh or something like that. Mm. And so he's trying to figure out if the guy's real or not.
Yeah, he says, like, show me your true form.
Yes, show me your true form. Yeah.
And the Japanese man is like, you've made up your mind about me. It doesn't matter what I say. Like, you've made up your mind. And the priest guy is like, no, I haven't. I'm trying to be like a, if you show me.
But it is good. He's like, well, I'm the devil. And you're like, why? That cuts back to the other, to John Goo when he comes back. And then he's like, yeah, he's like, that's what you think, isn't it? Like, it's sort of being, it's still being tricky and stuff.
You're,
and like,
you're truly like, what the fuck is going on? And John Goo is also like, what the fuck is going on? Don't know who to believe.
Is this about like bias or like prejudice, or is this whatever? And then, so at this point, somewhere in all this cross cutting, then the old man in the cave picks up a camera. And we always know, like, taking photos has been part of like the rituals and stuff. And he picks up a camera, and his hands are like now like demon hands. And then it like reveals he's like fully just like a demon. He's like a crazy demon.
Just a demon.
He's a demon. And he's got like red eyes, and he like looks like a creepy, crazy demon. And it cuts back to the woman, and the rooster has crowed like 2 times or something. And then John Goo sees, she has, earlier when he was buying his daughter all those gifts, he bought her this like pink
hair clip,
beret. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this hair clip. And he sees she has the hair clip. She's wearing items of clothing from some of the other people who have been like, have the boils on them, have been killers and stuff. And now he thinks, no, you're tricking me. And so then he runs back to the house.
Oh, no.
Before the rooster crows the third time, he goes under this sort of little sprig of something that,
it's
like
whatever
wilts.
Protective herbs that she has placed the like trap, and yeah, wilts. And so the protection is gone.
And then he gets inside. We're cross-cutting back. The demon's now taking a photo of the deacon.
I like that the demon has to take little photos.
Yeah. He gets inside. His wife and mother-in-law are like dead, stabbed. The girl's sitting there with a knife. And then we don't even see really what happens next, I believe. And then I think we next cut to the shaman showing up.
Yep.
And he walks inside, and he sees John Goo is like basically near, the girl's sitting out front exactly like the guy at the beginning, just kind of catatonic, covered in blood. He goes inside. John Goo is on death's door, kind of stabbed and fucked up,
bleeding out. Yeah,
bleeding out. He goes back to he takes a photo of him, right? Yep. He goes back to his car. He accidentally drops something. It has all the photos that the Japanese man had earlier. He picks him up, puts him back in his car, puts the camera in the car, and then drives off. And then it sort of just ends with John Goo like remembering a happier time with his daughter.
And it's like flashes of a memory of him and his daughter on a roller coaster laughing, and him mumbling to himself, don't worry, daddy's going to take care of everything. Daddy's going to take care of everything.
Yeah.
And then he dies, and that's the end of the movie.
Yeah. There's also a big thing, I will say, in the woman in white scene where he goes, why is this happening? And earlier he's asked why this is happening, and he's explained, like the shaman says, like, when you go fishing, do you know what you're going to catch? And he's like, no. And he's like, that's just what the demon does. He just like hooks some bait, and he doesn't know he's going to catch. And so there's no reason why it's happening.
Your daughter,
why it's happening
just
to your daughter.
Took the bait.
It's just your daughter took the bait, whatever it was. And then in this scene with a woman in white, he's like, why is this happening? And he's like, because you suspected someone you were wrong to suspect or something like that. And he goes, that doesn't make sense. She was sick before any of that. And so there's a little bit of like a weirdness with that. Anyway, so that's part of playing into everything here.
It's it gets crazy. I mean, for it's almost 3 hours. It's like 2 hours and 40 minutes or something like that. And there's really no dead space in it. Like, it's pretty packed full of just something is always happening. And you're just trying to like keep track of all these little pieces. And yeah, by the end, I was just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I do think I could explain what is happening or roughly, but
okay.
I'm sure I'm missing stuff, and also, for someone just listening to this podcast, they're like, oh, you've mangled describing it. I'm like, oh, don't forget the woman in white came in earlier. Like, I'm sure I screwed up. And they're like, oh, now your interpretation of your bad explanation. But I do think it is, the Japanese guy is the bad guy, is the devil. Mm-hmm. I think the shaman is a human who is sort of like made a deal with the devil.
Yep.
Who is bad, but isn't like supernatural.
Yes.
And the shaman is like, when he knows that crow is in the pot, like, he, because he's in cahoots with the guy, he knows, like, he put him there. When they're doing that ritual that's cross-cutting between the two things, it's just a trick. Like, he's not actually hurting the old man. He's trying to get rid of the woman in white is the good guy, and he's trying to get rid of her protections or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the old man is doing some weird like soul body transference thing
into the other guy, that the zombie that they end up...
To the guy dead in the truck. And so that's the evil spirit of the is in the zombie guy then.
He can take whatever form he wants.
Yeah, and so then that's why the Japanese man looks so scared for that sequence, because it's now this other guy is in his body, and he's like, I don't know what's going on. And then she... So it's a little bit of like a Schrodinger's cat thing, where she's like, if it crows three times, and it isn't like he walks in before the third crow, and then the killings happen. Like, he shows up and they have already happened. But, you know, I think it's just that he betrayed, right. that he mm-hmm. you know, you just gotta...
Trusted the wrong person.
Yes. And so even when, because we also see the shaman in scenes alone by himself get scared by the locusts and stuff. But I think that is...
The woman in white fucking with him.
She definitely makes him vomit and stuff. I think when he's leaving town, it's maybe the evil spirit going, you... Well, you got a deal. You got to work with me and come back.
Right. Yeah, you don't get to just come get out of this.
And so he has to come back because of that or something.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And in terms of like when he's like, but she got sick before I did this thing that I'm being punished for. I think it's like she did get sick from the earlier explanation. She just took the bait. It was random.
Mm-hmm.
But this like punishment now is because of like the hitting the guy with the car. Or something. It's like they actually hit an innocent man with their car because it was an innocent man's soul in this other body. And then they throw him over, like he sort of betrays his values or whatever. And he doesn't know. He doesn't know any better. And so he killed an innocent person, because that scene does end with her like watching it or something. And so that's roughly, I think, what is happening.
Yeah.
But it's also like, I would be interested if you watched it just going like, what if I mean, obviously we see a guy turn into a demon at some point. There's something supernatural. But if you did watch going like, would the tonic actually, if you did just watch it with the like, it's all just tainted mushroom tonic.
Right.
Would you see characters like drink it and stuff throughout? I'm not sure. But
yeah, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. There's like enough attention to detail that I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. It's so like the production design is so great. Too. Like, there's so much like clutter in every single person's like yard and house and stuff just has little I don't know, just like little piles of junk and. All over. It's really, really great.
One other little trivia that I thought was interesting is that the woman in white collects items from the people from the upper half of the body, and the demon collects things from the lower half. So she has the hair clips and like a bag.
The shoe. I never picked up on that. That's really
cool. I liked
that.
Yeah, because it's, you know, the all.
That's great. Yeah.
Sad. It sort of leans into the higher creatures, lower creatures.
Yeah.
You know, right, dogs versus worms. Yeah,
exactly.
But it's just funny because it's like the thing where you have that moment, you're like, oh, maybe he's doing good. Maybe the Japanese man is a good person and he's doing hexes to save people, and someone else is the bad person. Then it turns out like, well, that is a good instinct. It's just the woman in white who's doing it. But at this point, you've been taught like, no. If someone has someone's objects, it means they're bad. And so it's like, it's such a funny, like, it really does keep twisting who you're believing or not.
Yeah. And it is, I feel like a complaint about the movie is that it does end with the like, no, the xenophobia was good.
Yes. Oh, that is the craziest thing about it to me. I almost like am the most impressed by is like, there's no way you would do that with like an American movie. I mean,
right.
In general, and because people would be like, wait, what? Like,
yeah. And especially with the like history between those two countries, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it is like oddly like, people are so used to like, well, a movie wouldn't do this.
Right.
It feels uh-huh. like it's like,
yeah, like it like, gets away with it in a way.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Maybe just because it, yeah, that it does feel so obvious. I felt my brain when you guys were explaining it being like, oh, that was very the devil chose the Japanese man because they would be racist against him. And mm-hmm. so they're making him. The
yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
I think there is an explanation.
Yeah,
like
and the director yeah. was very much like, I mean, obviously he wouldn't be like, yeah, I did it because I wanted to be racist. Like, he very much was like, no, 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 that like was not my intention.
Oops, oops, oops.
Another movie I thought about doing here, but I didn't do, but is worth watching, especially if you like this, is, have you heard of this movie, The Medium, that came out
no.
like last year? So it started as... It's like, I think, co-written and produced by Na Hong Jin.
Mm-hmm.
I think it started as an idea he had of like, what if I just followed the shaman somewhere else? Mm. And then he like
Ooh.
Started doing, and then he was like, no, 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 I'm going to do a different type of shaman story. So it's there is a shaman, but it's not a shaman in cahoots with the devil or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's actually a Thai film. It's not even it's not a Korean film, but uh-huh. and it's the guy who... It's a Thai director who had made this movie Shudder that I think got remade in America. That's part
that
of like the
familiar.
Early 2000s kind of like, yeah, sort of Asian horror wave there.
Yeah.
But anyway, The Medium's pretty good.
Ooh,
and I'll
okay.
actually say it's more of like a true horror. Like, I love The Wailing and it's, but it is, I know I keep saying Mulholland Drive, but it's similar. It is Mulholland Drive-esque and like, it's not really pure horror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, certainly there's some gross out stuff with like the blood and the cheek getting bitten and the clavicle and stuff. And there are some really like creepy sequences, but there's not really like stuff that's like, huh, like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's almost no jump scares at all.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But The Medium has plenty. So anyway, Ooh. I would check out The Medium sometime.
Okay, I'm going to add it to my list.
I sort of love a horror movie that ends sad and bad.
Me
where it's
too.
Like, oh yeah, no, we didn't succeed and things got really bad. And I also like that they're not that there isn't necessarily really a reason why it happened to them, because it's just like,
yeah.
well, no, there's evil in the world, you fell into it, sorry, sort of like, right. like that is
that's
the
life.
Scariest thing about life
yeah.
is like some yeah. terrible shit could just happen and there's not always going to be an answer.
I love Sinister. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is, I mean, I remember I saw it in the theater with Paul Rust, who does the movie fest with me, the horror fest with me. And mm-hmm. like, we just kind of laughed at that, where like Vincent D'Onofrio was on Skype and he's like, the demon's name is Bagul. Like, they just like, it, it makes it so like, oh, it's all within the realm of human understanding in this, uh-huh. in this movie. It's like,
uh-huh. it follows rules. We understand.
Here's what his MO is. And here's his name even. And here's what he does. And here's maybe how to defeat him.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
There's just something I think in general, the horror that maybe kind of elevates itself a little, as much as I love the schlocky stuff. I love the, mm-hmm. I love all the different types in different ways. So it's not to say
yeah.
anything is like bad, but like the stuff that elevates a little more is maybe the stuff where it is a little bit like, you know, it's actually kind of creepy. It's like, you may not just be able to ever understand this. And it may.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there isn't an easy solution.
Even like my like interpretation of it is sort of, I'm sure there's little things in it that are kind of contradicting that or that are. And even my interpretation is like, I'm seeing scenes the characters didn't see. So at least I'm getting like the characters uh-huh. never gain this understanding and stuff.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. It is a lot of like. Their best explanation is like, it's like fishing. It's a hook. And obviously it starts with a fish hook. But like, it's, you know, you don't really know why any of it's ever happening.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
I do think that's best. Yeah, we've talked before about the first half of a horror movie is often better than the second half, because building that mystery is like what we're all like, ooh, what's it going to be? And then, yeah, when you ended up with like a clear explanation, it's usually unsatisfying and it is
yeah,
much
I mean,
creepier to just
the
be
fact
like
that, like
could happen to you.
Sinister 2 just has a character who like it almost becomes like a chess match between like right. We know what this demon does, and maybe we're going to try to counteract it in these ways, as opposed to like it seeming mysterious and vague and sinister one, you know, mm-hmm. for a long time.
Yeah. Also, like, there's no way if demons are real, I don't know, that they would abide by like human logic and rules, and you'd be like, I got you, demon. Like, no, it's a demon.
It always makes me laugh.
You can't possibly.
In Hellraiser, I just rewatched a scene where she's like, I'll trade you him for me. And they're like, okay. And it's like, they don't have to do that. Like, they would just be like, do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah. I mean, that's funny. So many like sort of haunting kind of movies. You have to like go back and you're like, why didn't they just kill him right away? Like, what was like that sort of like, why did they have to get
ramped
up?
My best explanation for all that is always just like, well, I guess the demon's just trying to have some fun. You know, it would get boring to just be able to kill anybody you would ever want easily. Like, why not give yourself a challenge?
I mean, like, sometimes some people come up with like a way it makes sense. Typically, I don't feel like that's what I'm seeing. Yeah.
That we're saying that this isn't a straight horror, I do feel confident Emily and our Henley would never want to watch this movie.
I never want to watch it. Okay. Yeah. Because I was just like, oh, no jump scares. Maybe not.
Especially Henley. I mean, the stuff with the kid is like really, it's just like the kind, there are scenes in it where it's just like everyone is in so much distress and pain.
Ooh,
and that's like,
yeah.
I feel like what I know you guys don't like.
Sure. Just like a feeling of doom.
Just seeing people
like that.
So scared and not knowing what to do and out of their element and afraid for their family members. There's a lot of that.
Sure.
A lot of despair. Yep.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I loved it. Yeah. I eat that shit up.
You tend to love that stuff.
Yeah. That's my favorite kind.
I hadn't watched it in a while. And when I rewatched it, I'd forgotten a lot of stuff, but I was just like, oh, yeah, I remember just how I was like, God, this is so fucking good. The first time I saw like movies where they're done and I immediately want to go like Google interviews with the director and read every interpretation and stuff. I'm like, you know, if I don't care, I don't do that. And I would just.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to go see this guy's other movies. And the second the medium came out last year, I was like, a guy associated with the whaling director is somewhat associated with this. Like, I gotta watch this. Like,
I'm gonna check that out. I'm excited.
That
to
makes
know
sense.
About it.
So yeah, that Ari Aster loves it so much because he's, I mean, just like absolute tragedy and a feeling of doom in every second. Mm-hmm. Is like that's his movies. So that makes a lot of sense.
And he's like, there's another guy making 2.5 hour horror movies.
And the shot that I mentioned that like looked like the Ari Aster shot, there's just a shot of the Japanese man like watching that really reminded me, I don't know, it's like probably a shot in lots of movies, but for some reason it just completely reminded me of, there's a scene where I think the grandmother is watching the daughter on the playground or something, and it's just this ominous of like him just staring, but the framing of it or something uh-huh. really just reminded me of that particular mm-hmm. shot. But yeah, and I also just got to say, I love a movie. I realize that I love a very long foreign film because having to focus on subtitles is like one of the best cures for my anxiety. Like, it's like one of the few things that can focus me and not have me like being watching TV and being on my phone at the same time. Which
you have to really pay attention.
Yeah, I just love it. I always feel amazing after these films.
I know. I love it. I watch a lot of foreign movies and I also eat dinner a lot and watch movies a lot, and it's that's always the mm-hmm. I have to pick one or the other with the mm-hmm. it's like, yeah. or like looking down
or like really time your bites
exactly shovel it in my mouth. I look up, I'm like, wait, what, who said what now?
yeah
Neil, thank you so much for coming on. This has been
of
great
course.
I'm so happy to have seen this movie, and I just had a great time talking about it.
Yeah, me too. I love this movie. I hope people check it out and
Shudder.com, folks. Shudder.com.
Shudder.com. We love it. Yeah, we love great. It. How far in advance do you start planning your upcoming year's horror? Like, do you have thoughts already about
what
this
I do
October?
Is
wow.
Basically, if I ever hear about a movie that might be good, I just write myself an email and just write Horror Fest and then write the name of the movie in it. And then
I love it.
Come like mid-September, I search my email for the word Horror Fest and then
smart.
Usually have a little starter list. But then I'll start. Because what we don't do is watch stuff that we think people have seen already. Like,
Okay.
So that's probably why we had never watched like Hereditary, because everyone we knew in our friend group had seen it.
That makes sense.
And
sure.
So I wind up going to a lot of like these lists of like best indie horror or not always indie, but just like straight to streaming kind of that maybe wasn't on Netflix, that was on like most of my friends don't have Shudder or stuff that was just like for rent or something, you know?
Things you'd have to like seek out if you wanted to watch them. Yeah.
Because even like Netflix stuff, there's sometimes been a few things that kind of look good, but we don't do because we're just like, people might have just watched this.
Right.
Maybe less so now, but I feel like a few years ago. And so, yeah, it's make a list throughout the year and then we always change it. And I email back and forth with Paul and we always kind of at the last minute swap something in or out.
That's so fun. I need to incorporate a Halloween, an October routine, like ritual thing like that. You know those people that do the 31 days of Halloween, which is like, to me, sounds incredibly stressful.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to do a movie every... I'd rather do like a day of a bunch of movies than one every day for a month.
Yes, I think I prefer this.
It's pretty fun. I mean, even then, you always get to like the fifth movie and you're like, okay, here we go. Oh, you know, another one we watched this past year that was really fun and entertaining for the group was this movie Meander, this like French.
Ooh.
I think it's mostly sort of there's not a lot of dialogue actually at all, but that might be another one to check out sometime. Meander is pretty good.
I'm going to write these down.
So many movies.
So many.
That's really wild. And there's a ton of horror movies coming out this year that I know Sammy's very excited about. They just keep on coming.
Men's coming out next week. I'm very excited.
I'm excited for that.
Got my tickets already.
That's Woo-hoo-hoo. Great. When I was in college and I was in the I actually wasn't in the theater department, but I did auditions and you had to do a dramatic monologue. I had just read Alex Garland's book, The Beach, that got turned into the movie later, and did like try for my dramatic monologue, did something. I'm cringing talking about this, but like took something from The Beach. Like, you know,
I should revisit the. I don't remember it at all. And someone was someone was like, defending it because it got like a lot of shit, right? I feel like it got
The movie, I actually like didn't even see the movie in theaters. I saw it like years later, and it's got like that video game sequence. It's a little like
I'm gonna watch
to put a lot of style
I'm
in
gonna add
stuff
it to my list and revisit
in a Danny Boyle-ish way, but
why the hell not.
I love 20 Days Later and Trainspotting.
Neil, thank you so
much. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Where can people find you? Do you have anything you want to plug that you're working on?
I don't really have anything to plug. No. and I'm not online. I have an Instagram that I haven't uploaded a photograph in about 2 years. Ooh. So
okay, great. I want to check back at the old stuff.
It's Neil or Dude is my name on that, but no, I'm bad. I don't know. My friends, the Sloppy Boys, have a funny podcast. I don't know.
Great.
Listen to them.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Check
love
out
that.
Some funny friends. We've got lots of funny friends.
Yeah.
With a lot of freaking podcasts. So yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for. Are there? I mean, I guess there's no voices.
There's no
voices. Usually in with a voice.
Just a lot of wailing. So maybe we can. I don't know. Do we want to wail? No. Let's just do a regular goodbye.
We could just say goodbye.
So from all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch, goodbye.
Goodbye.
That feels really Wow. Goodbye. There it is.
Hi everybody. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you really want to make our day, you can rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. You can also follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast. We are on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want even more content, you can become a patron at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. We will be back next week with a regular episode. We love you a lot. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.